So it's my pleasure to welcome for the first time to Many Rivers Books and Tea, Margaret C. Murray, author of these two books, Dreamers and Sun Dagger and That, as well as the forthcoming Spiral, which you, I think, will be talking about in her presentation tonight. Margaret Murray was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, graduated from Carnegie Mellon University and Hunter College, attended the Provincetown Fine Arts Work Center and Squaw Valley Screenwriters Conference. She's the owner of Right Words Press and has lived in the San Francisco Bay Area for many years, including most recently here in lovely Sebastopol, as well as Pinole, the mother of three, grandmother of two. Please join me in welcoming to Many Rivers Books and Tea, Margaret Murray.
Thank you. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Jim. What a beautiful venue to be in. And thank you, all of you who came tonight. Really special. So most of you know, but I am a writer, a teacher, a small press publisher. This is my first ever Thursday night event here at either as a participant or as a speaker. How many of you, is this your first night here? So only two people have been here before. Well, that is very special. Three people. Welcome. So So 6 months ago, I was in the store waiting for my daughter to have tea with me. It was her birthday, and she chose this Many Rivers Books and Teas as a way to celebrate. And she was late, and I was looking through all these fabulous objects and books, and started talking to Jim, and he invited me to speak on April 9th, which is very far away. But I said, great, because like I was in the throes of trying to get this book together, and I thought, this could be done by then. So both things happened. Here I am, and this is my proof copy. I only have one, and it's full of mistakes, but but it won't be. It won't be when it gets published. So I looked around, and I thought, this is a very spiritual bookstore. And in fact, I looked up on the website for Many Rivers Books and Tea, and the mission is to provide tools for spiritual practice. So I thought, well, what do my novels have to do with spirit? And four words came to me, and here they are: earth, sky, spirit, story. Kind of like one after another, like a PowerPoint presentation, that big, those big, clear fonts. Earth, sky, spirit, story. And it was a revelation to me, honestly, to see that. So I have looked on this reading as a way to explore how I write a novel in the presence of beginning with earth, moving to the sky, looking up, myself through my characters, seeing in that vast cloud expanse a vision, and from there story emerges. And I find that I have done that over and over. Every time I come and sit in front of my work, I pursue the same practice. Earth, sky, spirit, story. So I thought, yes, that makes so much sense, especially in terms of two of my three books. So the first book that describes my own beginnings is Dreamers, which has as its land, its ground, its earth, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and it was from there that I too envisioned and experience the story of Dreamers, which takes place in the civil rights era in Pittsburgh in the midst of different, more I guess, frightening racial tension than today. Maybe less frightening, I don't know. And a love affair between Thomas, an African-American actor, and Annie, a music student. It's full of trees, valleys, hills, the east forests of Pittsburgh. So I migrated to California, and I'm thinking that maybe some of you here also migrated, in the sense that this is not my home. And I'm wondering how many here have a birthplace that is not California here. So more than half of us have come here. And so after I came here, of course, I was astonished by the land in California. Lands, many lands, many scenes, many terrains. And then I got into Native American ceremonies and teaching for my own spiritual comfort, and I saw in their practices their love of the land, their love of spirit, their love of the sky and story. From that, I had this opportunity in 1999 to go to the Four Corners area of the United States, which I'd never been in. And when I got there, I saw my next book. I was at Chaco Canyon World Heritage Historical Site. There's so many names to it now, but it's a national park in the northwest corner of New Mexico. How many people have been here from Chaco? Oh, okay. So even a majority of you. So you know what it feels like to walk, to drive those 23 miles on that washboard road into Chaco. You know the feeling. It's overwhelming. And there was one tiny house, ruin, which is in this video we'll see, that spoke to me, and what was in fact the earth that I started from when I began to write sundagger.net. And so since so many of you have been in Chaco, you all know the phenomenon of the sundagger. So it's not just the title of my book or an internet address. There is a real sundagger. Does anyone want to share what they know about the sundagger? Yes,
just that it correlates to the summer, I think the summer solstice, that the Anasazi built a temple such that the sun would shine and create a dagger across a certain hieroglyph, I'm not sure what it is exactly, but and that was sort of like a cosmic art in a way.
Sort of right.
Okay, sort of right.
So this is a butte in the center of Chaco Canyon. It's Bajada Butte. These names are Spanish because the Spanish came through first of the Europeans, and they named these things, and some of them stuck. So of course these are not Anasazi names, and Anasazi are not even the people. You probably might know that. That's the name the Navajo gave to these, whoever built these fabulous ruins. When they came through, the Navajo, 150 years after the end of whatever civilization was here, even more than that, probably 200, 300 years. So Anasazi means enemy ancestors. That's what the Navajo thought of whoever was here. But back to the sundagger. So you see the dagger is coming down to the top of the butte. And in fact, in 1973, an artist archaeologist, Anna Sofer, took her art class up the Butte, which you could do then, on June 21st, and they were peering around under these 2,000-pound boulders at an angle at the very top, and they saw a spiral pecked into the sandstone in the wall, and slicing through it was the dagger of sunlight. That was only at the moment of the summer solstice that happened. Well, this was amazing. Then they noticed other things about this 19-circled spiral. This opened the minds of all the archaeologists and people interested in the Southwest history and trying to understand the mystery of all these ruins, because they began to see that these people arranged their lives and their buildings in relation to the heavens. All of their buildings are not for any uses we would build for, especially in Chaco Canyon, but in relation to the heavens. So at winter solstice, guess what? Two sundaggers frame the 19 circle spiral. Amazing. Which artist did that? When did they do that so long ago? And what did it mean? Well, this was fascinating to me. Fascinating. So I started to write my book. So I want to read a scene from the beginning that speaks to what happens in this kind of, what happened for me. So it starts out in a sweat lodge. And I'm curious to how many people here have been in sweat lodges or been, okay, so like five, six people. So you know that if you were going to look for a place that would keep you closest to the earth, you might start there. You're sitting on the ground. You're in a kind of a tomb of spirit and smoke and heat. And it turned out these sweat lodges definitely had precursors in all the kivas that these ancient peoples made. So Sarah, who's the main female character in sundagger.net, goes to sweat lodges for her own consolation, and she's here at a special night, the winter solstice. She came in late because she had to go to the Oakland Bridge, and she doesn't make it till after it starts, but here she is in the sweat lodge. And this is what Sarah saw. I'm going to read a page and a half. When the pipe reached her, she took five puffs, let out her breath, and watched the smoke rise. With each puff she took, the smoke wavered in front of her. Long after she passed the pipe, the smoke remained. Between the thongs, the smoke, and the steam, she relaxed. And then it came to her. This time she saw, rising from the burning stones, a building, a huge plexiglass and steel futuristic complex set in Silicon Valley that she recognized as her own workplace, TechGen. Then the telecom office dissolved and the valley did too. All became desert, white with sun and salt, light streaming and curling in a dry, cracked landscape, light disappearing into crevices and cracks, sand falling down and down. She saw a man and a woman with long, black, shiny hair down to her waist. The woman wore a cloth skirt and had straggling feathers and ribbons in her hair. She had a very small baby with dark spiked hair. The man helped her strap the baby to a cradle board on her back. The couple was dark skinned, carrying pouches, baskets, pottery, and sticks. They were they were walking up arroyos, up washes, going away into the flat, dead landscape. Circling overhead were hawks and small birds. The man walked faster. The woman and baby stayed behind. Soon the man was a spot in the desert you could zoom in or zoom out on. So was the woman. Sarah heard coyotes howling from her great distance of darkness and space and heat. Then something happened. Sarah could not see what. It was violent and despicable, vicious, inhuman. It reminded her of the pictures of the Palestinians being bombed in the refugee camp in Jenin, Israel. It reminded her of Afghanistan and the World Trade Center towers crumbling on her TV screen, of Iraq. But here were no planes, no bombs, no tanks, no guns or missiles. A dust storm, a heavy cloud, blurred her view. Through the dust, the man appeared before Sarah, carrying a bull with black and white designs, holding it out as an offering. She looked into his dark brown eyes, dead with grief. She looked into the bowl, but there was nothing in it. He looked so familiar to her. Her heart stopped. Who was he? For a second, she was terrified that it might be her son, Dan. But no, he looked like her old boss, Rowan. A hopeless Rowan look-alike man, so humiliated and beaten. Sarah felt hopeless too, and hopeless for the woman and the baby. When Two Crows, the Sweat Lodge leader, shouted, "Ho! Ho!" announcing the end of the round, the man in the vision threw the pot at her, breaking it into shards that passed over her and through the lodge door like steam, rushing into the night. That wasn't the first scene I wrote. That was the first scene that happened in the story. But you know how you don't always, often, I don't, start things in the beginning. And I wanted to tell you about the first scene I saw when I was going through Chaco, and later on back in Pinole, and in the next 6 years when I thought about this. What it all meant. What I saw was a man circling in a desert. And the desert had a lot of meaning for me because I was a tech writer in Silicon Valley, such as Sarah was, and I experienced my own desert, a kind of a spiritual desert, in the work, the writing that I was doing. And here I was in a real desert. Real desert. So I saw this man circling, a man such as, you know, you are, such in this day right now. And then he, all of a sudden, he spiraled up and became a bird. So I'm going to just read that as a small section. And this man is Sarah's boss. He's also the descendant of that vision Sarah saw. That primitive man and the family, the child and the woman. It was windy, very windy, when Rowan slammed shut the car door. "Bye, I'll be back," he called out as he aimed the remote beeper to relock the door. He wanted Anna to feel safe, even though there wasn't a single other car in the parking lot and the Chaco Canyon World Heritage Visitor Center was closed. Anna waved back, smiling through the car window for the first time today. The San Cristo Mountains surrounded him, red, brown, barren hills in the distance, flat mesas, sharp buttes, and space, wind and space, wind and space. They called this a wash, but it was more like a valley. The ground was mostly rubble, with a few twigs around a fire circle. Dry brush surrounded the campground. Piles of wood had been left by fire holes next to the picnic table. The ground was bare of garbage. Where were the squirrels, the wood rats, the rabbits, and the prairie dogs Anna had read to him about in the New Mexico guidebook on their way. Rowan began to walk faster, stirring up sand and dirt and rocks. Lugging the tripod, he felt for his remote in his pocket. It was still there. Soon he was walking in circles. He felt breathless, disoriented, strange, and yet crazily alive. How to explain it? He looked around and then behind him. The car was still back there in the lot. Anna was in the front seat in her blue jogging suit, studying whatever she studied for her advanced degree. He turned to face the high mesa. Ravens flew in and out of the sandstone bluffs, positioned like fortresses over the thin layer of rocks that spilled down onto the wash. There on the bluff, he saw something. What? He looked through the eye of his camera, focusing in. It was a man, no doubt. A tourist, but there were no other cars in the parking lot. A ranger, but the visitor center was closed. A backpacker. But from where? This time he set up the camera on his tripod and zoomed in. It was definitely a man. A thin man on a cliff, dressed in lizard-like snakeskin and feathers, flitting like pinned moths in the wind. He zeroed in, turning his lens to the farthest limit, and the man looked back at him with deep, deep eyes, as if mocking him with his own loneliness. They were his own eyes he was looking into. But wild and horrified, he knew this man from somewhere. Holding the camera tight to his heart, he looked away. The wind had turned fierce. This is the story of Magic Roller. That means anything could happen. So, there we go. But before now, so perhaps you would like to see what I saw and what Rowan would have seen coming into Chaco Canyon. So both of my screens have gone dark. So let's see what happens here. Help might come up here and yeah. Okay, so it's here.
Uh-huh.
It's not come.
There you go.
Whoops. Okay. Whoops.
Do you want to sit on this chair?
No, I have to get just get this.
Yeah, let's just use this. So what do you want to hit?
We're just down here. Just want to hit this.
Oh, okay. Where's the mouse? There it is. So we'll get the corner. There we go. I got it.
So we want this right here.
All right. Yeah, play.
Thank you. my other son, my younger son, Chris Goslow. And so before the Sundagger, there was a spiral, right? There's no Sundagger unless there is a spiral. So about a year after I wrote Sundagger, I was talking to a writer at a book fair we were at, and she said, well, you know, you could write a prequel to Sundagger. And I don't know why, but it really made an impression on me. And I thought, I could do that. So here it is. And unlike Sundagger, which is a story of two worlds, the present world of Silicon Valley Desert and the ancient world of the Anasazi Desert, this one never left the Anasazi world of the 1100s. I didn't know that when I started, but that's the way it was. That's the way it turned out. And so we meet the mother of the man on the cliff, the man that Sarah sees in her vision with the woman and the baby. And that's the first scene in this book, and I want to read that to you. It's a page and a half long. And it's her name is Willow, and she's looking over that Chaco wash that you just saw. And that it's described that Rowan is looking at too. But she's looking at it. It's about 1110 AD. I can be very specific because the archaeologists say this most of this civilization disappeared at 1025. So, but then they argue among themselves a lot. So it's all a mystery, frankly. That's one thing I find totally fascinating. So it was the most special of days. The fall equinox, a time of equal day and night in the canyon, the center of the world, and above the canyon too on the flat mesa tops with their sinkholes, badlands, scarce pinyon, and twisted juniper. Willow waited by Chaco Wash in her best deerskin skirt, biting her lip. She stood very still, small for her age, 14 and sturdy, with long shining black hair falling to her waist. Each time Willow bit her lip, the single dimple in her cheek deepened. What did that matter, since Water Hunter was not there to admire it? She threw her sandals at a sagebrush, tumbling in the wind. What if Water Hunter did not come? But he must. She could not bear that possibility, and so put it quickly out of her mind. Hoping for any sign of him, Willow squinted on tiptoe in the sunlight, her eyes following the sage as her mother had taught her, until it disappeared into the horizon. Become the rolling sagebrush to find what you are looking for, her mother had counseled. The soft autumn wind blew her skirt out and away from her strong body, but she didn't feel the pleasure of the wind. Willow was troubled. The tumbling bush reminded her that her mother did not approve of her waiting here at the great house, Pueblo del Arroyo, for Water Hunter. But more troubling was that the sagebrush had not shown Willow where he was. Nothing seemed to move in the haze beyond the wash. Willow scanned all the way to the South Mesa Gap, where the people were gathering for a great celebration. She clasped her hands to her chest to stop them from trembling. Today, the powerful and frightening elders were climbing the butte, as they did at each turn of the year, to implore the sun to bring rain. At the top, where the Sundagger appeared, they made sacrifices so that the sun would bless the people. Soon Willow would hear their ominous shriek chanting and the beat of their foot drums as they danced and prayed to the sun to return them to that perfect balance of light and darkness that their ancestors saw when they crawled out of the Sapapu, a hole in the third world leading to the sacred canyon. Abandoning the thought of finding the disappearing tumbleweed, Willow focused on thinking like Coyote, scanning east, west, north, and south, Coyote, help me find him, she called. She rubbed her eyes, hoping to see him loping over the desert. So 8 years pass, and much of the book, and many things happen. And Willow and her, she has now a son of 8, take a journey to Chimney Rock, Colorado, which is the furthest northern outlier of the Chacoan culture. And it is a place that I went on the same journey this last summer. I followed my character's route from Chaco Canyon to Chimney Rock, Colorado. And you say, well, what is there in Chimney Rock? Well, I'm going to show you a video. My trip to the war gods at Chimney Rock, Colorado. Basically, some people from Chaco went to the top of these promontories, these strange, misshapen promontories at the top of a 8,000 foot high mountain in Colorado. It's already, and made a perfect replica of the great houses of Chaco up there, and situated in a certain place so that it would have you as a person, as a elder, as a high priest, would have a vision of another phenomena in the sky called the standing still moon. Has anybody ever heard of that? Standing still moon. It's another phenomena, and it's a cycle of 18, almost 19 years, where the moon progressively rises on the horizon a little further north for 9.5 years, and then it appears to stand still as it seemingly turns and goes south. So the whole cycle is nearly 19 years, the same number of circles on the spiral. And in fact, there's a little set of ellipses on that spiral in Chaco Canyon that show the standing still moon's trajectory. This wasn't discovered until the 90s, until certain archaeologists and other people came up to Chimney Rock and watched the standing still moon rise between these two pinnacles. So before I show you a little of what I saw on my trip, and no, it's not the time of the standing still moon last summer, but if you, it's 2025, if you want to go and see it for yourself, that's going to be the next major standstill in Chimney Rock. So I'm going to read you this section where Willow and her son, Little Hawk, are traveling when they first come to the place where they see Chimney Rock, which in spiral I call Standing Rock. The Spanish also saw this when they came through. Their Spanish name translates to Standing Rock. I figured that I don't think the Anasazi had true. They didn't have chimneys. They didn't have chimneys. So they came to the ruins of a small settlement on the hot, dry slopes of the lowland. This must be where the people stayed, Willow explained. People like the Bear Clan, who migrated from the canyon to serve the elite, the High Ones. Why did they call themselves the High Ones? Asked Little Hawk. Because they live high on the mountain, close to the standing still moon. Oh, he said. By the river were the remains of the trellises that would have supported cornstalks, beans, and squash plants. Could there be anyone still living here? They passed old fire pits, broken walls made of chink stone, and mounds for planting, where a few dry sticks still stood. Little Hawk noticed a broken owl in a sandy runoff. He stepped on an upside-down bowl, breaking it. Willow turned over a ladle with a design she herself might have made. Little Hawk peered through the fallen masonry, over the walls and through the T-shaped windows, where he crawled onto a ledge. Willow could see he was tiring rapidly and would not be able to go much farther. She sat down on a broken wall and considered what to do. Perhaps I should stay here for the night. But this ruin was too exposed. There was no place to hide. They must go on, but her son was so tired. She looked over at Little Hawk on the window ledge and then beyond, and that is when she saw Standing Rocks Mountain, ominous and dark, with the two misshapen rock spires on top, one bulbous and wide, the other much higher and narrower. Little Hawk, there it is! He squinted at the mountain and gave a laugh. So, we're going to see now what he must have seen. So let's see. How is this going to happen here? So we got it on one. Here we are. And now.
Just press space.
Space. Oh yeah.
Oh, okay. Click it and then press space.
Click it.
Click your mouse.
Click my mouse. Oh.
Now press space.
Oh. Think of this chimney rock. They think of those two pinnacles as the war gods. That the Navajo know these two twin spires as Monster Slayer and Born for Water. Mm. Which has a, they have a lot of myths around those two. There's stars coming down from the sky. And you can find a more information about my trips and my research on my website, margaretcmurray.com. And how does it sound for questions and thoughts and your experiences of traveling this territory or anything else about your writing or thoughts about writing? Yeah.
Well, I was curious because you spoke a little bit before when I was talking about this, about your process and how it relates to those four words that came up to you, and I was wondering what you could describe the relationship between your writing process and the earth and sky and spirit and philosophy.
Well,
story.
That's the, I start with my characters on the earth. Or somebody, and I start describing what I see. So that's the beginning. And you can see a lot of that in what I read tonight. And then the characters look up. Willow is looking on the horizon for water hunter, the same hunter who has given her his attention, whom she's fallen so madly in love with. And Sarah in the sweat lodge is looking in the sweat, in the plumes of the pipe smoke and up, you know, and she sees her vision just like Willow sees her love vision. So you see the trajectory? And so my story, or the story I'm writing, appears as a result of that. And so then when I come back to it again, I read what I've written and I say, well, then what happened next? Well, they're on the ground, you know. So I start with the ground again. What do they see where they're at? What happens when Willow leaves? What happens when Sarah gets out of that foot? She's all, what's around her? Where is it at? And then she looks up. There's all those possibilities. That's what I'm thinking of. That's how it works. Has anyone been to this area and had a similar experience of feeling spiritually embraced, you might say? Does anybody have that experience? Who's been there?
There about 5 years ago with my husband and his mother. She lives in New Mexico and she'd never been there and she wanted to go. And it was an amazing experience and so far out of the way of anything else. That rough road that it takes to get there. And just hearing it just reminded me of all the day that we spent there. It was pretty incredible. At first, for some reason, I had it mixed up in my head that you were talking about Canyon de Chelly, which I've also been to.
Yes, me too.
But they're really different in how they are energetically, spiritually, I think. It's such a mystery. To hear anybody even try to figure it out from being in that time is fascinating to me. To hear it during the writing, because, you know, it's as much of a possibility as anything. You could be actually channeling and send as opposed to just being a creative writer. No one knows what was really.
Isn't that the great thing about art? Isn't that the lure of art?
Yeah.
You can channel so much bigger than yourself. Spirit, you can channel spirit. Yes, you're so right. It is so mysterious, the culture. There are many more examples of mystery I could talk about.
It's just hard for me to imagine how any of that was created.
Exactly. This the back of my back of spiral is going to have a, here's what it says, and this is the case. At the end of a culture that built structures as big as the Roman Colosseum. Those ruins where you saw in the beginning at Pueblo Bonito, they are bigger than the Roman Colosseum when medieval Europe was still in the Dark Ages. Remember, the water table here is 8 to 9 inches a year. It's kind of like we have now. On a high desert landscape of brooding wind and dark storm clouds that never drop rain. So these people were always migrating. And that is one of the symbols of the spiral, a symbol of migration. And I've read some great books, and one I totally recommend is called The House of Rain by Craig Childs. And he took their route, he walked the route, he's a journalist. It's a lot of experience and a fabulous writer. He walked the route of the peoples, which their center of the world was Chaco Canyon. And they had a system I'll give you the exact number, of roads. They had a system of roads. Miles of roads over, and an interesting facet of these roads, the Great North Road is 60 miles long from Chaco due north to Aztec, New Mexico, that area, and it is straight. In other words, it doesn't follow what rivers do, every mesa, every hill, every valley. No, it goes up every hill, straight down, up, straight. And it's wide, it's like 30 feet wide. It has curbs. There were no beasts of burden to travel on that. There were no wheels, there were no carts, there was hardly anybody walking there. There was hardly anybody in this huge edifice of Pueblo Bonito and Chaco Canyon. Hardly any burials. No weapons. They wouldn't have had iron, but. But under one of the rooms in Pueblo Bonito, when they excavated, and there were several excavations, none of which were necessarily that great for the land. And you have to remember, all this is in great contrast to the sacredness that the Pueblo people consider this land to be. So it's the Westerners digging it all up. They found more turquoise underneath one of these rooms with two mummied corpses than the whole Southwest in one room. So the theory is that these huge edifices, including the one in Chimney Rock, were built for spirit, for ceremony, not for commerce, certainly not for habitat, living in. It's like the Lincoln Memorial or the Chartres Cathedral, Notre Dame. It's like the water, there's so few water, and the water that was, it's determined by all these various experts. Water would have been needed for the building blocks in many of these places, especially at the top of Chimney Rock, but other places. So the water that was coming in, the 9 inches of rain a year, were going to the buildings. Isn't it? It's amazing. Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. On behalf of many rivers. And I just have a couple of announcements. First, we have a donation bowl around the counter. And we encourage you to contribute to it. We share the contents with our speakers and retain half to help maintain the space for future such events. I also, of course, want to point out the books and CDs here on this table for you to look at on your way out. And thank you all for coming. And Jim has a thing to mention.
There is a sign-up list if you're interested in Margaret's new book, Spiral, which will come out soon.
This month.
So there's two on the counter.
Yeah, there's actually
we'll
two of them.
We'll be able to order it for you and get it for you and then notify you when it arrives if you would like us to do that.
Right, so those are right. Those two sign-up lists are right here on the counter. Thank you, Jim, for remembering that. And thank you, Margaret, again, and thank you all for coming tonight.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
And my...